You're listening to the Politics in Action Report at CGMQ 88.9 FM. I'm Emily, bringing you up to speed on the latest political news. On this segment, what the Crane protests mean for the Champlain Bridge, the questions that arise with the enactment of Canada's marijuana legislation, also, the latest update on the federal campaign trail, and Saskatchewan's premier lobbying for changes to Canada's equalized payment program. I will begin this segment with discussing what the Crane protests are doing to the construction of the Champlain Bridge. Montreal's new Champlain Bridge is said to be constructed by the end of this year. But who really believes that construction will be wrapping up by then? Especially not with delays prompted by protesting employees. Construction of the new Champlain Bridge had begun back in 2015, and the expected completion time is December of this year, which I do not see happening at this point in time. Contractors had not anticipated delays, certainly not the delay caused by the Crane protest. I want to get into it. Why are the crane operators on strike to begin with? Crane operators are protesting the changes to their training practices. The new changes, as initiated by the provincial government, now enable for those who had graduated with a diploma in vocational studies can instead acquire a competency certificate, which would then qualify them to operate cranes. This essentially means the risk of accidents occurring is higher, therefore jeopardizing the safety of crane operators and general workers on a worksite. The Quebec government prompted for this new regulation, given the lack of workers in this field, as an attempt to encourage more people to enter into this field. This is especially relevant in considering infrastructure is a field that will always be in constant demand for crane operators as we continuously grow our cities and the infrastructure that surrounds it. Since June the 14th, crane operators have been absent to work sites across Quebec, including probably most relevant of projects, the new Champlain Bridge construction site. Despite a ruling given by the Administrative Labour Tribunal last Thursday decreeing crane operators were to resume work immediately, crane operators were absent on the work site Friday. As well, the Construction Commission shares the same perspective in stating that these strikes can be classified as illegal strikes. They believe it is illegal on grounds that a collective agreement is in place, which prohibits any purposeful delays of the infrastructural projects. So what I will say about this is that it is inevitable when big projects are being constructed that investors and constructors are bound to uncover some bumps in the road through the construction process. This includes the current ongoing crane workers' strike that had wrapped up its sixth day of protests last week. However, recent reports have indicated that, as of yesterday, the crane workers' union had prompted crane operators to resume work due to the threat of receiving hefty fines. So what can we learn from this? Construction usually takes longer than usual. With that being said, we should take example from Europe, where construction of projects, such as bridges, begins well before the old bridge's expiry date. This is why Canada, along with the individual provinces, should plan these projects well ahead and anticipate delays so as not to delay the project more than it needs to be. As we know, the Champlain Bridge has been on its last leg for quite some time, and planning more ahead would be more beneficial to the province's infrastructural projects. Now that marijuana is set for legalization on October 17th of this year, certain aspects need to be examined by both the federal and the provincial governments. First, there is the matter of pardoning past offenders of possessing, consuming, or selling the substance prior to its legalization, and this is being examined by the Public Safety Minister, Ralph Goodale. This means all former charges laid against individuals who have been convicted of some sort of legal violation relative to marijuana will be removed from their permanent records. Until the date of legalization, public officials have urged Canadians to hold off its consumption and to avoid any convictions between now and October 17th. And this would be vital for speeding up the pardoning process and make less work for the Public Safety Ministry. There is the matter of how individual provinces are going to manage the substance. Quebec has already adopted its bill, designated to control and manage the distribution and the sale of the substance in the province. But other provinces must now scurry to get a bill in place prior to the legalization date. Otherwise, there will be no legal framework that will guide the province for handling all areas surrounding marijuana. Simply put, without a bill in place for a province, this will result in utter chaos and confusion over how to go about organizing the industry, and this will leave discrepancies and no clear solution, meaning ambiguity. Yes, marijuana is legal here in Canada, but not really in this province. That kind of idea. So the provinces have no choice but to adapt a bill. Opposition to a bill would be a waste of time at this point, and it would probably be best to negotiate the terms of the provincial bills as swiftly as possible and make altercations at a later date. I mean, I agree with headlines suggesting that this is a complete and utter mess. It is, as Maclean's magazine wrote, as though Prime Minister Trudeau said, "We have legalized marijuana, now the provinces have to figure it out on their own." The entire purpose of legalizing the substance, according to Justin Trudeau, was to keep it out of the hands of youth and to generate federal revenue. There is a component of the new marijuana legislation that strictly criminalizes any adult who sells the substance to minors. However, given these things are often sold on the black market as they are, it will be just as difficult to seek set violators and charge them for the violation. For this reason to legalize marijuana, keeping it out of the hands of the youth, I don't really see how legalizing it will serve this purpose. For one thing, the youth sector have expressed how easily they could purchase and find the substance, and this is the case prior to the legalization. Imagine now with legalization, how easy it will be for the youth to acquire the substance. I'll give you the example of cigarettes. Cigarettes are not intended to be consumed for children under 18 years of age, yet children as young as 13 have been known to get a hold of the substance nonetheless. I would, however, affirm that legalizing marijuana is a source of federal revenue, but to me, keeping it out of the hands of youth is not what I would say is a reasonable means to legalize the substance, because I have doubts of its effectiveness. Before I leave this topic, I would like to examine another aspect, and that is, what the implications are for marijuana-smoking Canadians wishing to travel to the United States. Those who do consume marijuana are probably wondering the legality of traveling with the substance. The reality is, you cannot. For one thing, marijuana is legal in some states, but the entire country as a whole has not legalized the substance. This essentially means that you cannot travel with the substance over the border to begin with. Additionally, recent reports are suggesting that even admitting to be a recreational user is enough grounds to bar you from the country for life. The main reason for this is because admitting you are a recreational user means you have intent on consuming the substance in the future and possibly in the US, which, under federal law, supports the crime ring. And Americans don't want crime committers entering the country, and this is the same situation for Canada. The Canadian border can refuse any traveler from entering if finding out they have a criminal record. Lawyers suggest refusing to answer the question, which could get you refused entry for the day. However, they affirm it is a less of a loss than getting banned from visiting the US for your entire life. So as certain, it is expected this new legislation would raise many new questions. How will each province decide to manage the industry? Will it be mainly privatized? How about travel restrictions? Granted, as time passes between now and the legalized date, the Government of Canada will have most Canadians' questions answered. With more than 1 year to go prior to the next federal election, it appears the campaign period has already begun. The three federal party candidates, the Conservatives, the Liberals, and the NDP, were present in Quebec earlier this week for the province's Fête Nationale. The candidates were met with supporters, as well as some unhappy Canadians on Trudeau's part. But what does being present in Quebec for the national holiday do for the political candidates? It's a question probably some of you are asking. Well, it establishes recognition. Recognition that certain political candidates were present during these relevant celebrations as they made their rounds to console with Quebecers on relevant issues. Who has the most public appearances does contribute a great deal to electoral campaigns. What I did happen to notice was who wasn't there for La Fête Nationale, and that was a representative for the Bloc Québécois. I seldom heard if any representative made a public appearance. Correct me if I am wrong, but this should have been the obvious party representative to have been in the public spotlight for Quebec's renowned holiday. Perhaps this is the party's manner of quieting down after the large storm that was the rocky road led by Matson Ouellette. The party is in the midst of finding a new leader to replace Ouellette, so I can attribute their absence to reorganizing before making any campaign appearances. From seeing each candidate's interactions with the public, let's look at their support as reflective cumulatively with all the federal election polls. The latest federal election polls indicate that the Liberals and the Conservatives are tied, with the Liberals with a slight decimal point lead. The Liberals are sitting at 34.9%, while the Conservatives are sitting at 34.2%, with the NDP trailing behind at 19%, and the Green Party just under 7%, and the Bloc Québécois at 4%. Based on my personal examination, it appears Scheer is ramping up much-needed votes in Quebec, definitely stealing some seats from the Liberals in the next election. This tells us not necessarily that voters no longer appreciate Justin Trudeau and his policies, but rather that Andrew Scheer is offering something more valuable and of interest to Quebec voters. So as we can see, as reflected in the polls, people are still in favor of Trudeau, but Scheer is also supported at the same level. Now that we have looked at the top candidates, the Liberals and the Conservatives, let's examine the NDP. So for Jagmeet Singh, to me, this is essentially mission impossible. The loss of a recent by-election not only indicated the NDP's third spot, but projects that the NDP isn't doing enough to stay competitive in Quebec. Current electoral polls indicate that if an election was held today, the NDP would only secure one seat in the province of Quebec. The NDP's social policies would appeal to a socially favorable province as Quebec, so it is seemingly a no-brainer that Quebecers would indulge in the NDP, but voting behavior goes beyond simplicity. The main reason for this is because voting behavior is complex and goes beyond common sense. For instance, voters will vote strategically, even if it means voting for one's second choice. The thing is, Jagmeet Singh must find his competitive edge in federal politics, and no one sees him as a first choice. It is a given he has all the means to do so. He does have policy initiatives that are generally favorable, such as universal dental insurance, but he needs to sell himself as a candidate. If Singh does not succeed in the next federal election, this will represent a great loss for the NDP, who had secured the official opposition status once back in 2011. Now for the last party's performance I will discuss, I'm going to skip the Green Party this week, because I want to talk about the Bloc Québécois. The Bloc Québécois, as you know, is currently in disarray and have not been campaigning at all. So I'm quite surprised that the federal polls currently indicate if an election was held today, they would acquire three seats in the House of Commons. With the current magnitude of campaigning, which is pretty well obsolete, no one in their right mind would think to vote for the Bloc because they currently have nothing solid to offer to Quebec voters. Voters don't like instability because it means, for Quebec voters specifically, they will not have adequate representation federally, and this is something Quebecers value, being a unique identity in Canada. Overall, one thing I can affirm will be certain in the next election is that we will not have another NDP official opposition, that is for sure. We will likely be in the hands of Andrew Scheer, or we will have a second term with Justin Trudeau. And as the polls depict, we will more than likely have a minority government, which means the government in standing won't have as much legitimacy to pass legislation due to direct opposition. So as time is winding down between now and October of 2019, every candidate will need to step up their campaign game, because as it stands, it appears the winner will not take all. But we will have a close election between the Liberals and the Conservatives. As for the NDP and the Bloc, they will need to do all they can to keep their heads above water. It appears that Saskatchewan's Premier, Scott Moe, is proposing to alter Canada's current economic system of equalized payments. Premier Moe is aspiring to create a system that is fair and equitable for all Canadian provinces. This comes at a time when Canada's equalized payment method is scheduled for renewal in 2019 and has been in effect since 1957. For those who do not know what equalized payments are, I will break it down for you. Among the Canadian provinces, we have what is called haves and the have-not provinces, and this distinction is based off the premise of which provinces have the financial means to provide basic services to its citizens. The entire idea of the Equalized Payments Program is, according to Christopher Dunn, is to ensure that all provinces have comparable levels of public services at reasonable comparable tax rates. In simplicity, the Canadian government provides funds to poorer provinces to help fund for the public services. These would be the have-nots, whereas the haves are classified as those more able to provide comparable public services without as much government funding. Payouts into this program come from federal revenues, which, according to economists, grows every year. While this seems reasonable, given some provinces simply need more aid providing their citizens with basic needs, this program does not come without opposition. Equalized payments is a system specifically opposed by Western Canada for the reason that they are generating wealth, some of which goes into supporting Canada as a whole, but the provinces don't see much in return in terms of funds. For one, resource-rich provinces like Alberta can expect to receive little in return in equalized funds due to their capability to raise funds and provide services to its citizens. Consider it like the example of students and governmental loans and bursaries. If a student's parents make too much money to qualify for financial aid, then they will receive little to no amount of financial support from the government. The basic idea is that the parents of the students have the financial capacity to support their child throughout their academics. To put this debate simply, Western Canada wants to be compensated for what they provide financially to Canada as a whole. Because much of Western Canada has raised riches with their resource-rich territories, they would like to see some of it come back to them, so they can invest it provincially however they want. Otherwise, it goes to Ottawa for national investments. So it should come to no surprise that Saskatchewan's Premier Moe wants to alter the program. What Moe argues is the fact that Quebec receives about $100 billion in equalized payments, while Saskatchewan receives zero. However, I will point out that the entire purpose of equalized payments is for other provinces to share some of their surplus of funds, and Canada can distribute it to other provinces that don't generate as much revenue. Moe also takes the example of how much child care costs in the province of Quebec, which is relatively cheaper, when compared to Saskatchewan's childcare costs. This differentiation in daycare costs I don't attribute as due to the equalized payment method. because Quebec has a cheaper daycare system because it has a higher rate of taxation when compared to the other provinces. It's not so much about how much provinces get, but how they spend their funds as well as accumulate it through taxation. Throughout this whole debate, I cannot help but notice the presence of ideology. Conservatives, more prominent in the West, and I would say among the rich, typically favor systems where you get what you put into the system, whereas opposition parties, like the Liberals, tend to support giving the lesser wealthy a tax break so they can have sufficient spending power to generate a living. The majority of the tax burden is hence given to those who are well off. We can see that the West is tired of shouldering the heavier costs and receiving no compensation, while the lesser wealthy of the provinces have relief provided to them. So this debate is political in nature. Premier Scott Moe intends to present this proposal to all premiers in an upcoming meeting. There is no telling who will be in favor of the bill and those who will not. Well, Quebec might not be, but it is definitely something that will cause a stir among current standing premiers. I will discuss more of this debate as it develops. In the meantime, I leave you with this commentary. Until next time. Thank you for listening to another segment of Politics in Action. I hope to see you the next time. I'm Emily with CJMQ 88.9 FM.